Hello, welcome to the Reducer. I'm joined, three white blokes, Dave Rothney, that's me, Howard H. Smith and Dave Klein. Are we okay, boys?
All well, yeah. Thank you.
We're really ticking the diversity box.
We are. This is a Reducer where we like to kind of look at a subject and talk around it and sort of maybe get to the nub of it, maybe not. And this week, given the fact it's England-Scotland playing tonight, now I didn't want to add to the whole kind of wall of coverage already about the Nostalgia Fest and all that kind of thing. It's 25 years. So it did kind of get me thinking. So a lot of people say, where were you, you know, then? I was thinking sort of, how were you then? And then I got from there to thinking, well, when I was growing up, I remember when I was 12 in 1982 World Cup thinking, God, the next World Cup, I'll be 16. And it kind of just goes on like that. And you sort of wonder, you know, where you'll be. And there's moments in time in certain tournaments, which, yes, it was about the football, but it was also about much more than that. So I sort of wanted to sort of unpick everybody's feelings. We've kind of got two, well, not unpick your feelings, that would be like a psychiatrist, but we've got 1990 and 1996, which to me were kind of, I suppose, on that theme, just briefly. Not, Italia 90 for me was, I was 20 years old at the time. I'm now 51. So I'll say that quickly so that, you know, we can skirt over that. But, you know, and then 96, of course, for me, just to kick off, was it was the dying days of the major government. It was kind of that point in time where it felt like London and England was kind of on the up and, you know, and we lost. So kind of what's your kind of earliest memory of football tournaments and those particular ones? How did they kind of, did they shape your life in that way that I'm talking about?
I'm ashamed. I'm old enough to say, I remember 1970 in Mexico.
Okay.
Well, I distinctly remember it because I had Esso tokens, and I wish I kept them because it'd be worth a fucking fortune now.
You think so?
I had Alan Clark, Mick Jones, and my memory is failing me.
Wow.
Gordon Banks, Peter Benetti. Oh, yeah. I had your Benettis and your Bankses and your Martin Chivers.
So Esso tokens, was that like the Bitcoin?
Yeah, they were like
the
they were like little metal coins. You get them with petrol. So my dad got me the book, and I managed to get the full England team. So I had a full collection, and I think I just chucked it out when I was about 17 or 18 because it just seemed like the right thing to do at the time because I was into punk and stuff.
Oh wow! Do you regret that then?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, think about it. It'd be like 51-year-old collectible piece of football memorabilia now. I'm sure there's quite a few of them knocking around, but, you know, there's not that many. My first memory was, and I distinctly remember, I remember it well, was England going out in the quarters against West Germany, as they were, and they all had diarrhoea.
Who did?
The England team.
They really?
Gordon Banks was sick, so Peter Benetti covered for him. They all went out. They claimed they lost the match because they were all poorly. They had Montezuma's Revenge, as it was called.
I'm pretty sure that was the game where we were 2-0 up against the Germans.
Yeah, half-time.
Yeah, and decided to start and made some stupid substitutions, including, was it taking Bobby Charlton off?
That's the one.
Yeah.
This is done and dusted. Typical English.
Yeah. And we literally, we may as well have just turned around to the Germans and go, right, we're absolutely taking a piss out of you.
Yeah.
And you're taking Bobby Charlton off with half an hour to go. So they just went, right, whatever the equivalent of fuck this is in German, and got stuck in. My first tournament was I say that like I played in one. The first tournament I remember is 1978, the final. And it was Argentina against Holland. Which everybody always remembers the confetti the Argentinian fans used to throw around before every game. And of course, it's not till years later, because when they ate at the time, that you find out it wasn't confetti, it was money. It was the cash of the time, which was so devalued, it was worthless. So the way that the population protested against the government was at football matches, because you get shot in the head if you protested anywhere else. So yeah, they used to, and that's what that was all about. That was all fucking money they were throwing up in the air, which is just...
Inflation was about 200% or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's bizarre, because now when you think about it, that's what football has become. Just get a load of money and rip it up and throw it away.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're Man City, just throw it on the pitch. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm glad you didn't know that, Rothers, because I was hoping somebody on this call wouldn't.
But that's a great fact. I had no idea about that.
Well, I only came across it a few years ago. But again, proof that if you don't die, you can pick up enough knowledge during your life to appear intelligent. I mainly remember the final for what was going on in our street. Now, I say street, very middle class. We lived on a road, you know, and we had neighbours across the road who had a brand new Volvo. And whilst the final was on, the actual final was on, I don't know why, but something caught my eye across the road. And I looked and I watched this guy sort of just getting into this brand new sporty Volvo that the people across the road had bought, and they owned a Volvo dealership, and driving it off. And I told my parents, and they rang them up and said, oh, you know, who have you lent your car to? And they're like, well, what are you talking about? And they said, well, someone's just driven off in your car. And bloke had stolen it and ended up wrapping it round a lamppost by half time.
Seriously?
Yeah. So that's my 1978 World Cup memory.
I don't know if you remember as well. Wasn't it 78? I think Peru. Years later, they were alleged to have thrown a game, weren't they? To allow Argentina to progress at the expense of Brazil, I think it was.
I don't know if it was ever proven. Wasn't that also the World Cup where Peru beat Scotland?
It was.
It's yet another home before the postcards job, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So that was 78. I had the Peru Tabutio team, and I remember I used to fix all my games when I played Tabutio.
Corruption was endemic. That white kit with the red diagonal stripe on the shirt.
Yeah, it was indeed, So Dave, before we went live today, we were having a little chat before, and I was talking about, you know, 96, Italian 90 being a big time, and 96. Yeah. And you said that you think that both were hugely overrated.
Yeah, so let's dig
into that a little bit. Yeah.
All right. Well, hang on. Can I sort of frame that as a question as well? Because I'm quite interested
of
here.
Course.
So we won it 1966. The only two tournaments since then where we've got anywhere close were 90 and 96. So if they are overrated, just how bad are all of our other performances as well?
Over to you, Dave. We have to preface this. Dave is a self-confessed pessimist, as am I. But Dave, go ahead.
Well, I distinctly remember because I was, Bobby Robson was a pariah going into the tournament. I don't know if you recall that, but
yeah.
Everyone was still seething about the way we went out of Euro 88.
No, that wasn't it. Sorry. Can I just that wasn't it. He announced that he wasn't going to be managing the England side after the tournament. He signed a contract with PSV Eindhoven,
I didn't say the two were related.
No, you hadn't mentioned it at all, so I didn't know you were going to. So if I'm jumping in and preempting it, I apologise, but you hadn't mentioned it, so that's why I did.
That's what's known as a reducer. That is getting your retaliation in first.
Absolutely.
I was about to say that. Our previous attempt at a tournament was Euro 88, where we lost to Ireland famously. I don't think we won a match.
We drew with Ireland.
Not in 88, we didn't. We lost 1-0. They beat us.
Did we? I thought Lineker scored.
No.
In
Euro 88. That's what I'm saying. The Republic of Ireland beat England 1-0. So that was the lowest point of Robson's reign, basically. There was calls for him to go, and the next I remember during the qualifying for Italia 90, it was constant. He's got to go, and then what you have said as well about he was pressurised in the end to obviously start looking for work. So when they got word of the fact that he was actually considering taking the PSV job, well, that just added that was fuel to the fire, basically. Anyway, so. Here's my case. I remember we started against Ireland again. I mean, that wasn't the greatest of matches to start against. And we drew. We didn't lose. That was good. We managed to avoid defeat. Then we played Holland, sorry, the Netherlands. You're not allowed to say Holland anymore, by the way. Did you know that? It's only two districts out of there are 12 districts that form the Netherlands, and Holland is only two of them, so you can't say Holland generically to cover the Netherlands. So, there you go. We drew 0-0 with Netherlands, and then we went on to play Egypt. And it was like, oh, we've got to win this. We've got to smash them or whatever. I don't know, the usual nonsense that we didn't say smash back then. But we managed to narrowly defeat Egypt. I think it was 1-0.
Yeah, Mark Wright header.
Okay, so we had a total of 5 points in the group. We managed to qualify for the next round, round of 16.
Yeah.
And then we took on Belgium. And I don't know if you call, but it was, I think we were into extra time. Yeah. And it was 1-0. David Platt scored from the Gascoigne free kick.
Yeah.
This is Italia 90 we're talking about.
This
right?
is Italia 90, yeah.
Yeah.
So he nicks it. So what I'm saying is, so that's, we scored a total of 3 goals in 4 games.
Yeah.
And it's just, when is this going to get any better? You know, I mean, that was, don't get me wrong, the Platt goal was great, but that was the first high point in 4 matches, because up to that point it had been fucking turgid.
Yeah, but that's the competition. I mean, if you go back to 1990 and you look at what was going on in all the groups, yeah, none of them were scoring 6 and 7 goals. It's just a fallacy.
I get it, but my point is, if this is what is memorable, well, it's only memorable insofar as I remember the results. There was nothing that actually happened in apart from the Platt goal. And then at the quarterfinal, we played Cameroon. And that was genuinely exciting, I would say. But it was only exciting because they kept coming back at us. And it's like, fucking hell, they're going to beat us. They're going to beat us. They're going to beat us. And I think Lineker converted 2 pens.
Yeah.
I think we won 3-2.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we know what happened next.
That was can I just interject that was in the game against Cameroon was in the Rome Stadium, and local fans had a banner that read "Welcome English Hooligans," because we were still world beaters at something, and we were there, you know, we were their idols, and I just thought that was a really nice touch by the Italians.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpick there. I mean, the thing I would say, though, about Platt, I mean, this is what football is, isn't it? It's about moments. And I do think that was a pivotal moment in that competition. Because I remember the following day I was in London and I was at the tube station, and the announcement came over the tannoy from the station master or whatever, saying, "Those gentlemen, please stand back." And David Platt, what a boy. And everybody on the platform was kind of united. And that's the great thing about football. Everybody was like smiling and nodding. And there was no doubt that goal was... we played badly during the game, but that kind of goal in the last minute, and when it came, suddenly felt like, oh, we might have a chance here. It did create a bit of momentum, I suppose.
I think there is also... And this is kind of stating the obvious, but you only remember your own team's performance... So listening to you both speak about, you know, the Belgium game, again, nowhere near as bad as you remember it. But do you know what? Two teams were playing and you haven't remembered the Belgian performance. And the Belgians were really good. They still had Schifo. They probably should have beaten us, and they were probably the better team. And we won.
Yeah.
But apparently not memorable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what you want, ultimately, you want every game to be won 3-0. You want something amazing happening in every game. I mean, and this is the downfall of every England fan. It's what you bring, it's your expectations, and what you bring defines how you will enjoy the game or how you will remember it. And Dave, I mean, I've watched Euro games with you.
Yeah.
I mean, at times it's almost... like being sat with an opposition fan, which is which says a lot about the English. It's classic English pessimism and classic just...
Well, I did caveat it with that I'm glass half empty fan.
Yeah, no, absolutely, mate. And I heard that, and I'm playing to it right now. I remember 90 as just being, what a surprise. Qualifying was turgid. Show me a tournament where it hasn't been. Because ultimately, you spend 2 years qualifying for the tournament. And then all of a sudden, like this tournament now. Oh, start Grealish, start Sterling, start Foden, start Kane, start Sancho, start Bellingham. Yeah, in fact, just throw on 11 players that are all attackers and forget the keeper. You know, it's hilarious. The tournament starts and people are going, oh, why aren't we battering everyone 3-4-0? Because that's never happened. Oh, did we just win our first ever opening Euros game? Yeah, still not good enough for some people because they're English and they like to fucking moan and moan and moan. And they're only happy when they're unhappy. In their misery, well, is that where...
I think you're lumping me in with the sort of...
No, hang on.
No, I've just said... I said the English, and this isn't, you know, directed at either of you. But what I'm saying is, there's a certain element out there that are only happy when they're unhappy. They would be fucked without something to moan about. And those people seem to think that because we, you know, we didn't batter... Croatia in the opening game. Oh, yeah. We're shit. We're rubbish. And it's the concept of the fact that we're still qualifying, as in you don't spend 2 years qualifying and then all of a sudden decide to spend or, you know, to send on your ultimate attacking team when you're in a four-game league that you've got to get out of. So we'll start playing attacking and knockout football, funnily enough, when it gets to the knockout stages. But until then, it is always drudgery. Always has been, always will be.
A lot of brilliant points there. I think the best one you made out, which I think I'd like to sort of dive into, is a bit where you're saying that it's kind of we all bring our kind of expectations with us and our personalities with us to the game, and that affects the way that we approach it and feel about it and then react to defeat or victory. Now, has that changed? I mean, I live in Wales, so... And I must say, and I suppose there's two things here. I live in Wales and also I'm getting older. And I don't know whether that's made me more mellow, but one of the upsides of living in Wales, I live in North Wales, and actually, people who don't live in North Wales won't know this. There's actually a fair proportion of England fans in North Wales. It's very much an overspill. It's called, you know, the Scouse Riviera. There's an overspill of, like, you know, Manx and Scousers. So, and even mates of mine who are Welsh will say, well, we'll support Wales till they go out, and then, you know, we'll probably follow England and begrudgingly end up kind of half supporting them, never quite supporting them. So it's not quite the kind of visceral hatred that perhaps is portrayed and also in rugby. But the point I'm trying to make is, watching England in North Wales, it does take the sting out of it quite nicely in a way. So when we lose in a major tournament, it's disappointing, but I can just go for a little walk outside and it's kind of done in about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, the streets aren't full of mourning England fans and people saying we was robbed and how did we lose that game. You just think, yep, okay. I remember watching England get knocked out of, so was it Romania in the Euros under Keegan?
Yeah.
I watched that in Ireland in Cork with a bunch of people from Cork. And that was a similar feeling that we got to, and they were taking the mick out of me. And it kind of, at the end of it, they were just kind of laughed at me. And it kind of made it easier to just get over it really quickly because, you know, you don't like to sort of linger. And it was kind of dealt with within about 10 minutes. And I thought, yeah, okay, well, we've lost that. There you go. But the point being, to Howard's point, so as I've got older, I've found that I'm kind of not less bothered. But I suppose, yeah, less, because it's how you react to defeat. It's not that I don't care. I want to see England do well, but I'm much more neutral now when I go into an England game. I take it on face value more. But then, Howard, it seems that you were always like that from what you're saying. You seem to have this ability to think, well, you know, this is a tournament. The other team's playing. They've got good players. We've got good players. You know, go figure.
I've always considered... I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm a passionate Englishman. But when it comes to football, I think... that I've always defined myself as a supporter and not a fan, because obviously you can't spell fanatic without fan. And I think I just think there's a difference. Do you know what I mean? It's like I can sit and watch England being outplayed, and I'm not going to sit there shouting at the television and blaming the players and blaming the manager and blaming the formation, whilst the opposition are playing really fucking great football. and teaching us a lesson. But your average fan is just going to sit there and fucking moan and blame all sorts of imaginary stuff that's just appeared in their head, or they've read or written, or, oh, well, he's just got engaged, he doesn't care, and that kind of fucking shit. And that's why, do you know what, I listened to somebody today, and I thought, you're spot on, mate. The best way to watch an England game, on my own, because everyone else is a cunt watching England.
Well, I was going to ask if you fancy watching the match tonight, Howard, so...
Oh, two cunts together.
Well, I'm watching it with my two boys, and that's great. That's similar to kind of watching it by myself, because there isn't that... To your point, there's not that tribalism. We're not in the pub, we're not, you know... There's none of that to deal with. It's a bit like Champions League final, which is just a little bit of a detour. Champions League final, I was sitting watching it with somebody who's exactly what you described, Dave. He was like sitting with an opposition fan. And the moment the team sheet was announced and there was no holding midfielder, it was like, oh, Pep has screwed it up again in the kind of a big game. And then he saw the whole game through that lens.
Yes.
And afterwards, I mean, Kante was so good in midfield that night. Chilwell was incredible. Reece James was incredible. Mount was great. Yeah. You know, Havertz, great finish. They played better. They were the better side. And Chelsea, that was a brilliant performance. And yes, you could argue, but if we'd have had a balanced field, we let them in. I don't know. I just think on the night they imposed themselves. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Champions League final.
Yeah, but hang on, Dave. Hang on, because you've raised something that's really important there, and it is connected to international football. Let's go back a few years when everybody was saying that the quality of foreigners coming into England is going to keep English talent going to stagnate. It's not going to get they're not going to get first team games, and the next generation of England players, it's just they're not going to come through. And the counter argument to that was that foreign players arriving, just standards being raised in general, is just going to mean that our young players will get a go. They'll just have to be even better. And you just talked about a Champions League final between two English sides that had eight English players, three players that you named outstanding on the day, Chilwell, James, Mount. You know, this era that we're in now with England, this didn't just fucking happen by accident. You know, we've got young players coming through who've won the World Cup in their age group.
Yeah,
you know, this is what's happening at the moment. It's fruition of a lot of years of work, and that Champions League final is a prime example.
Yeah, fair point. Just to change, talk about caring for football. When was the last time you cried, or have you ever cried in a major tournament where England have been eliminated?
No, categorically no.
Have you ever been upset?
I was upset after, well, funnily enough, when Germany beat us in Italia 90 on pens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was fucking livid with Chris Waddle, more so than Pierce, because Chris Waddle just hoofed it over the bar like he didn't give a shit. I'm sure that's not the case. But
obviously. Yeah. But I mean, you know, Pellant is, can't take him. I mean, I'm the same as Dave. 90 and 96 gutted, but I tell you what, the most gutted I've been since then, I think, was Euro 2004, when we should have won it, but Rooney broke a metatarsal in the semi against Portugal. Because I think if we'd gone into the final, I think we'd have beaten Greece.
Yeah, could have, would have, should have. Well, the only time I have after that Euro 96. You know, I genuinely thought we would win that game. And every time I see Gascoigne's trailing leg, think each time I watch that, he's going to score this time. So I think that was the most upset I've ever been. Second behind that, obviously Italia 90, but actually, talking earlier, Howard, about, you know, you remember sort of the moments when we did well in tournaments like 1996. Actually, in terms of the football we played, France 98, you know, and that, and the disallowed goal.
Yeah.
Campbell or Shearer, I can't remember who, somebody elbowed and somebody, was it Shearer scored it?
Campbell scored.
Campbell headed it and Shearer elbowed the guy.
Yeah.
And that was a moment of, oh, I remember feeling kind of pretty bereft when that happened, because I just thought, right, that's it then. Because I really thought, it was one of those where you think it's gone in, it's scored, you know, we're on. And we were great in that tournament. In terms of the football we played, we went out early, but we played really good football. And that whole qualifying campaign before that under Hoddle was outstanding. Yeah.
Well, funnily enough, you hear a lot of players, especially Rio Ferdinand, who say that Glenn Hoddle, if he'd stayed, something we'd have won a tournament. He was really, really highly rated, but you know, tactically, it just really well. And but it's become clear that a quite recurring theme in Hoddle's managerial career is man management, which he wasn't great at, and showing off on the training pitch, which, you know, players just winds players up, because he was still, even as England manager, he was still, you know, still very good. So, but I agree. And funnily enough, I saw Gabriel Batistuta asked about that game. And he said, despite the fact that they went further in the tournament, that for him was one of the best international games he's ever played in, and easily the best game at that tournament. And he described it as a game for men with cojones.
Yeah.
A game of men. And he was like, yeah, because it was just fucking balls to the wall. And but funnily enough, I've just realised when we got knocked out against them, I ended up in the street, being separated by my mate from my flatmate, because he was basically all for hanging David Beckham, and I was like, look, you know, it's, and I guess it's an example of that attitude.
Didn't we watch that game together?
We didn't watch that game together. No, it was myself, Andy Love, and my then flatmate Dave Robinson.
Jody Dave.
Yeah, Andy broke us up. It was quite it was quite amusing.
Wow.
But yeah, it was total thug. But it was probably what you were talking about there earlier, Dave. I don't think I appeared angry enough for Dave's liking, because, like I said, he was all for, like, you know, let's hang David Beckham, and I was like, well, that's not really fair. It's not because of him that we lost the game. You may as well fucking have a go at Alan Shearer as well, because it's his fault that we didn't go through with the goal.
Yeah. Dave, because you were saying you were angry with Chris Waddle, so is that how your upset sort of
shows itself? Quite quick. I think I remember I was at uni. I was in the second year of my university degree as a mature student. I was kind of old. We went to the pub, and I was just like, we were all staring at each other for a minute, and then we just had a couple of pints, and we were fine. We were just over it and talking about other stuff. And it's just like, I just don't get people. Well, I do. I understand why, because they've got fuck all else in their lives, basically. That's why they set so much stock by it. You know, this obsession with their own team and with the national team and stuff. It's just get a fucking life, basically.
And you've never had that at any point in your... Because when I was younger, I think my self-esteem was sort of index-linked to the fortunes of my football team. You know, I definitely feel better if my team's won.
It's very fleeting. It's not, you know, you're not just like that, oh, that's it, I'm not going to beat my wife up this weekend because the team won. It's just like, I don't get people, and I just think people need to set less stock by what their fucking football team is doing, and just get out more and get a hobby, do something else besides pissing money on football matches.
Yeah, but
to be fair,
football is the hobby, and that's what they've chosen as the hobby. Just because you don't like it, or you think they've picked the wrong hobby, doesn't make it wrong.
No, well, I'm not saying it does. I'm just saying beating people up or getting pissed off about things, you know, for the next 3 or 4 days and taking it out on everyone, that's wrong.
Yeah.
Just like, grow up. It's just a football match.
Yeah, I think you know, like you said,
and as we saw last weekend when Christian Eriksen nearly fucking died, it is less important. It's not a matter of life and death. It's fucking, that is more important. Life and death.
Well, it's the old phrase, isn't it? Football is the most important of life's least important things.
That Klopp that said that. It's very good. Klopp's the first time I've heard him say it. Heard
I think
that
Klopp
phrase
said it.
Klopp,
yeah.
So I don't know if he invented it, but yeah, certainly. I think it's spot on. And I think Shankly, it was a gag, wasn't it, from Shankly?
He was
actually joking. It was his the old Scottish wit coming through there.
He was always tongue in cheek, but it was taken but literally by some fucking fuckwit idiot dickheads.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I know. Manchester United legend Bill Shankly. What a great player for him, for them he was.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's not forget Manchester United legend Bill Shankly.
Yeah.
I didn't know this. That he played for Man United. I didn't know that. I must be the only person in the world who didn't know that.
Oh, and Man City.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
It was before my time.
Yeah, well, yeah, quite some way before your time. So, going back to, or rather, sort of moving on from 90 to 96, someone said, I watched a documentary on it recently because obviously that's all that's been shown on television. Somebody just made a really great point and it's really obvious. So it probably won't amaze you, but it amazed me. And they said, well, 1990 and 96, very close together. Deepest we've got into any tournament since 66. And one man was at the heart of both teams. And you just think, fucking hell, yeah. Maybe.
Well, Gascoigne.
Yeah. You just think, I don't know about anyone else, but I always think of Gascoigne as not making the most of his talent, of failing at the highest level. But when you think of the fact that he dragged England into two semi-finals, that's pretty fucking impressive.
And were it not for injuries, who said we wouldn't have qualified for the 94 World Cup? And
yeah,
I know it woulda, shoulda, coulda, like Dave said earlier. But poor Graham Taylor was blighted by injuries in that campaign. Yeah.
But in 90, funnily enough, we're not the only ones who remember Gazza's miss in 1996. Somebody who is incredibly bitter to this day about that miss is Ian Wright, who to this day doesn't speak to Terry Venables because Venables didn't bring him on, and Wright said that chance falls to me. We're in the final. And he's never forgiven him for not bringing him on.
Well, again, he needs to get over that as well because, he should know better than that. I watched his documentary on domestic violence a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
There are more important things, and he's made a pretty good fucking living out of it. But, 25 years later, I think he needs to have moved on from that.
Well, to be fair, it's either on the one hand, players don't care. Now they care too much? Well, exactly what percentage of caring would you like England players to put in?
Ian, I don't know him, of course, but his personality is very passionate about football and life in general, he seems to be. But I just think, draw a line.
But that's
easy to say when they're not your emotions. I mean, if we could all just draw a line under things. Oh, yeah. Oh, my dad's died. When? 8 days ago. Get over it. Like for some people, you're dragging it on. Why? You should look. They've gone. There's nothing you can do.
Well,
cheer up. Or do you mourn?
I want to hear from Terry Venables. Why didn't he bring Wrighty on? He must have had some tactical reason.
Oh, absolutely. Well, absolutely. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not that I don't actually agree with you, Dave. Because the thing you do, I think any grudges, any walk of life, if it's 20, 30 years ago and you haven't moved on and you haven't realised it's water under the bridge and you're still not speaking to somebody, it's actually doing you more harm than good.
Yeah. Conversely, I'll flip it on its head because it's like that. It never happened. He was never got on the pitch to know that he may not have even been anywhere near the ball. So it's a ridiculous thing to say. But had he been on the pitch and Venables takes him off and then that opportunity arises, then I could understand a little bit more why he's bitter. But it's almost like, oh, I could have dated that girl, but I never did. I hate the husband she did marry in the end. It's just fucking ridiculous.
But there's also something here that you've put your finger on, which is in every tournament, there is always where England have done well or where they've given pleasure to people. And we look at that team and we think, wow, there's always going to be members of the squad or people that didn't make it who will look back on it with nothing but kind of disappointment. You know, it's the people that don't make the final cut. I certainly remember the the Ashes, this is going into cricket, when we won in 2005 with Michael Vaughan, that incredible series. But, you know, that started with the likes of Butcher and Thorpe being kind of, you know, ushered out of international cricket. So they would look back on that golden summer as one of the worst periods of their life. And it's the same for others. I mean, Gascoigne, of course, was not included in the 98 squad. But, you know, Michael Owen came along, so there was kind of like a new hero there. And I just wonder about that in terms of, often there's all this euphoria going on around the tournament. Euros for me was a great period. You know, I was 26. I'd just met you two, actually. We hadn't met that shortly. It was around that time when we actually met.
That's correct.
Golden. And I don't want to lay too much kind of on it, but, you know, you can look through it through one lens. It was the dying death throes of the Conservative government. There was sort of new hope coming along. London was kind of felt like the centre of some sort of cultural revolution. As a moment in time, and I was in my mid-20s, which I think is the most important element of all this, and as a moment of time, it just felt kind of fairly carefree. I know it wasn't like that for everybody, but for me personally at the time, I didn't have that much.
No, it was a good time because we were all doing comedy together and we had a laugh.
The other thing as well is our ages, you know, we were... Because to be honest, this is not the first time I've heard some of the things you were saying there, Rothers. I think you can count them all off and think, yeah, didn't give a fuck about that. I didn't give a fuck about that. Yeah, I don't remember London being on the verge of some sort of cultural thing. I've never liked Tony Blair. I've absolutely despised the smarmy cunt ever since I saw him give his first speech, you know, so-called socialist with a blue tie and a blue suit, who has clearly strayed so far to the middle that it was just a red Conservative Party, which I tried telling all of my red friends at the time, but they wouldn't believe me. So future war criminal Tony Blair was not somebody I was going to get behind by or be excited by. All I remember is the football. That's it.
Well, without splitting hairs, he wasn't elected till the following year.
Exactly, 97. No, exactly. That's why I didn't. Yeah, I said it was kind of like the dying death throes of the Conservative.
Yeah, I think. Well, I mean, in terms of culture, that we had the whole Britpop thing, if you were into that, and there was just like that cheeky sort of youthful element going on with that. And so the football, you know, it was a home tournament. It was on home soil. Football's coming home, all that sort of stuff. So I'll give you that. There was definitely a milieu of hope and sort of carefreeness about it.
You've mentioned something that's really interesting there, actually, Dave. And this is a point that I wanted to make. You said Britpop, right? Now, Britpop, that phrase is probably the last time that anything cultural was given a Brit label. Because obviously we've seen a move, the Welsh have broken away, the Scots clearly want to break away. And it's quite ironic that Britpop came to an end there. Because I don't know if anybody remembers this, but in 1990, if you look at the England supporters, you'll see a lot of Union Jacks in there. And as we grew up as kids, when you saw England, you saw mainly Union Jacks. And in this tournament in 1996... the biggest cultural reference that has been left behind by this tournament is the reclaiming of the St George's flag for England fans and, alternatively, the Scottish fans reclaiming the St Andrew's fucking time symbol or whatever it is. because we were in the same group, neither side sets of fans are rocking up with fucking... Union Jacks, so it was forced upon us, and that was a massive turnaround. I still think to this day that is Euro 1990, Euro 96's biggest contribution towards society as a whole was the fact that actually it reclaimed those two flags for the nations, but it was also kind of, it just seems like division kind of started to set in around that time.
That's a really, really interesting point. Yeah, because then we forward 25 years later and look where we are.
Yeah, and the thing is as well is that from that tournament on, it was England flags. That's it. It's just England. I mean, can you imagine going to an England game with a fucking Union Jack now? People would be like, well, there's two countries there that fucking hate us. What's wrong with you? I genuinely think it was, you know, it was kind of the start. And it was forced upon us because England and Scotland were in the same group. Who knows where would we be? We'd be now if England and Scotland weren't in the same group. It's kind of weird.
Well, and also the tournament was in England, wasn't it? It wasn't in Britain. We didn't have,
yes.
There were no games in. It was purely Euro 96 in England. So, yeah, we couldn't, you know, the Union Jack, as it were, wouldn't have cut it in terms of representing the tournament.
You're right. And funnily enough, if we tried to do the tournament now, oh God, you can imagine the bleating from the Scots and the Welsh and everybody else if they're not included and it's not a British tournament, despite the fact that from a governmental point of view they keep fucking off and want nothing else to do with us. So it's like, yeah, right, okay.
Funnily enough, I mean, they've been showing it to death because we're playing them tonight. They've been showing the Gascoigne goal against Scotland, which was great. But for me,
oh, here we go.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. Go on.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, the one abiding memory for me was getting, well, I don't like to use the word, but I guess it is revenge against the Netherlands for during the qualification for the 94 World Cup. Famously,
pulled
out, and then they went down the other end and Koeman scored, who just committed a foul.
Yeah, should have been off.
So, use your vernacular.
See, I get the sack now.
To batter the Netherlands, or what? We did. It was a battering. That, for me, was the match. I remember actually jumping up out of my seat when, I think it was Sashira's second. It was like that great move, and then he slid it across to him, and he just battered it with his instep, and it flew into the top corner. And that was a moment. You know, you were asking me if I ever get emotional, Dave. I got excited. I wouldn't say I went. I didn't cry, and I didn't. It was brief, but I jumped out of my seat, going, "Fucking brilliant! Get in!"
Yeah.
Nice.
Do you know what? Having been sceptical when Dave started out on what he was going to, I totally agree. 4-1, battering the Dutch. I just think, like anybody who talks about games in that tournament, oh, beating Scotland, yeah, whatever. How can beating a team 2-1 be better than beating a team 4-1? And let's not forget...
Who happens to be the Netherlands?
Yeah, who happened to be the Netherlands. We were 4-0 up, and word got on the pitch that Scotland were going to go through, so let's fucking let a goal in this and make sure they don't go through as well, and make it a win-win. And as Shearer said when he was asked recently, when they got back in the dressing room and found out, was there any reaction? And he went, yeah, we fucking pissed ourselves.
So that can be our moment then. Our collective, we want to bring us together. I think that's our collective moment then, is the 4-1 against the Netherlands in Euro 96. What about any other kind of... I think, you know, Michael Owen's goal against Argentina, I mean, that game ended in defeat. But that was a moment where I jumped out of my chair and thought, oh my God, that's one of the best goals I've ever seen.
That was France 98.
And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sorry, I'm saying that.
And do you know what?
We've agreed on 96, it's the Holland game.
Well, I don't know why I remember watching France 98 and I remember thinking, wow, I will be an old man by the time Michael Owen retires, and he's been a pundit for 5 or 6 years.
Wow. Yeah. There you go. That's life. For me, as well, I mean, I'm just going to sort of conclude my Euro 96 because, frankly, the semi-final was a fucking disaster. But prior to the semi-final, we played Spain in the quarters.
Yeah.
And of course, that match ended 0-0 and went to pens. And Stuart Pearce getting his mojo back after missing in 1990, Italian 90.
Yeah.
That was great as well. So, yeah, I mean, beating the Dutch and then Pearce's reaction. More over the Gascoigne goal, which, you know, it was Gascoigne. He's brilliant, but it was Scotland. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And I'd like to toss in a question, and it's kind of weird because I'd like you to name both your favourite England player across the tournaments we've mentioned, and then the best England player across that period as well.
Okay.
And dear listeners, this ain't planned, so this might take a while.
You mean across 96 and 90, or across
no? I mean from them right to the present day as your
Okay. Well, I think I'm going to go easy because I haven't had too long to think about it. But I would say two. I'd say it's between Lineker and Gascoigne.
For which best or favourite?
Well, I'm going to say Gascoigne because the way he was on the ball during that, during his pomp, and the way he exploded on the scene in Italia 90, albeit fortuitously because Neil Webb broke his leg. But he kind of really made his name there. But then he was injured for a long time. So actually, maybe I'm remembering him at Spurs more when he was in his absolute pomp. But certainly, he was my favourite. I think he was my favourite because I just thought when he got the ball, it was exciting. The best, I'm going to go with Lineker. I know Shearer's there as well, but I'm personally going to go with Lineker. And because I just loved his grace under fire. It's a cigarette paper between him and Shearer, but I just prefer Lineker, and I'll never forget that Cameroon performance, and I'll never forget that have a word with him to the bench after Gascoigne got booked.
And I'll never forget him shitting himself on the pitch and then wiping his ass along the ground like a dog.
Yeah, that's right.
So same question to you, Dave. Favourite and best.
Yeah, well, I'm going to agree with Dave on Lineker, who I thought, you know, I remember Lineker in 86, he was top scorer, and that he was just doing it for England for quite a long period of time, scoring crucial goals when we needed. So I just think the way Graham Taylor, I got a lot of time for Graham Taylor. I think he kind of reinvented himself over the years following the debacle that was the qualification for the 94 World Cup. But I think the way he treated Lineker at the 92, Euro 92, the way he effectively retired him, he took him off again the Swedish game. I don't even remember that.
Yeah.
And I just
brought Alan Smith on.
That ends for a great servant of his country, you know, the number of goals he'd scored. I mean, he was almost a top scorer, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Rooney's goals. Well, I'm going to surprise you with my second choice, because I think he was one of the most elegant and brilliant attacking, well, not attacking, but he was so good on the ball.
Yeah.
Des Walker, as a centre-half, was one of the best centre-halves we've ever produced, in my opinion. He was he just had everything. He had pace, great on the ball, good in the air, great leadership. It was just a shame that he didn't play more games for England.
Who is it?
Des Walker.
Oh, Des Walker. Yeah,
I mean, unfortunately, he got found out in his one season outside of England.
He
went to Sampdoria for one season and was sold straight away.
It's not long enough to settle, though, is it, really?
Remember, this is a guy who played all his career for Clough, and then he went to the ultimate defensive and professional Italian league. So it was, you know, fish out of water.
Sorry, you're saying you shit.
No, not at all. But I'm not picking apart your choice at all, because Walker was fucking great. And I've sort of gone similar-ish to both of you. I'm going to combine... I'm not. I'm going to take as my favourite, I am going to take Gazza, purely because he could do things that no other England player, A, would think of doing, and B... he was the only person that would think of doing it, and he was the only person that could do it. I mean, he was sometimes, to quote Lineker, he was just playing a different game. And he said, when David Platt came on in one of the games, because you've got to remember, David Platt's on the bench in most games in Euro 96, came on and he got the ball, and the first thing he did was give it to Gazza, and he just gave it to Gazza and went, there you go, mate, it's your game. And when you're talking international players... talking about a player on their team where they just go, but he was just so much better than us. It's like, that's when you realise that somebody was incredible. He's my favourite. And I'm probably going to shock you with my next answer.
Go on.
Which is, there's very, very few England players over the years that were recognised as being the best at their position in the world. Ever. Not, I mean, you know, it's hardly ever have we been able to produce somebody like
that. I know what's coming.
You do, you do. So brilliant was he that he smashed appearance records. He had Ronaldo in his pocket twice. He was so good that Sven let the entire team go up into the opposition's box at corners, leaving only this man his defence. Ashley Cole is the greatest England player of our generation.
That's a great choice. A great choice. We've got about a minute left, so I just wanted to say thank you. It's been a pleasure, as ever. And I just think, Dave, you know, if we were going to sum up things, and I think the new, never mind football's coming home, I think the new slogan for every tournament from now on should be get over it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
Football, get over it. Draw a line under it. Yeah, move on.
get the fucking grip.
Yeah. Can brilliant.
All right, boys, lovely. Nice one.
Nice one.